Welcome to Ujiria, broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Sandy Springs, Georgia. Ujiria is a Greek word meaning health of body and mind in aging individuals. Ujiria Radio is a weekly show celebrating Atlanta's heroes that contribute to the Ujiria of Atlanta's elderly and disabled population. Now joining us in the studio are your hosts, Sam Grass and Brad Culp.
Good morning, Brad. Good morning, Lee. How are you today?
Good morning. Doing great.
I am okay. How about you? You're a little fired up today.
Coming off jury duty, you should be in great spirits.
Yes, I am. It's better to be here.
Well, you know, it's 9 days before Christmas, and in our house, the holiday rush is on. It never seems to fail at this time of year when it's supposed to be full of peace and joy. Our house is filled with hustle, bustle, and turmoil. What's it like around your house at this time of year, Brad?
I think you know the answer to that question. Peace and joy, of course.
Brad also lies very, very well. I've got one piece of trivia about the holiday seasons, and it definitely is that, trivia. But, you know, I think it speaks well to what we've become as a society. In the United States, during the Christmas season, Visa cards alone are used an estimated 11,000 times per minute. That equates to almost 200 swipes of a Visa card per second. I'm afraid we have a neurosis for consumption, and at the very best, that is an unhealthy situation.
I was wondering what that burn mark was on my wife's wallet.
Well, with that uplifting piece of information, let's move right along. We have a full house today with four terrific guests. Joining us is Tom Kerrigan, of a geriatric care manager with Meta Johnson & Associates, Sandy Thurber, director of social services at the Extended Care Center of Gwinnett Medical Center, Deborah Herring and Jean Holly with the Congregational and Health Ministry of the Gwinnett Medical Center. So let's begin with our first guest, Tom Kerrigan. How are you today?
I'm doing good, Sam. Thanks.
As I introduced you, Tom, I indicated that you are a geriatric care manager with Meta Johnson Associates, but you also wear a second hat with the Eldorado Hill Law Firm. Tell us what your capacity is there.
Well, Sam, as a geriatric consultant, I do wear several hats, but primarily as a care manager with Meta and also with Patricia Elrod Hill. She's an elder law attorney in Norcross, and I'm her client services director. So I oversee, in addition to the legal needs, we try to be comprehensive in our approach to assess the needs of the clients and their families, especially with geriatrics. So I participate in that process as well.
Well, we're going to develop both of those stories, but before we do so, Tom, why don't you tell us a little bit about your background, where you're from, where did you go to school, how did you get to become in the senior care arena?
Mm-hmm. I hail from the Chicago area and got my master's degree in social work and administration back in 1984 at the University of Illinois. From there, I went into acute care settings, and I've always worked with healthcare and geriatrics, acute care settings, hospice, mental health, and finally just specializing in geriatric consulting.
And what was it that tickled your interest for geriatric care services?
Well, a lot of it, honestly, was situationally with the jobs I procured, but also realized early on this was going to be a very growing segment of our population that would need specialized services as well.
Well, as I said, Tom, you wear two hats. Let's speak first of the geriatric care consultant with Meta Johnson. Explain, what is a geriatric care manager / consultant? What is it that you do? What services are offered?
Well, in essence, the profession of geriatric care management came about in the early 80s, primarily in cities like New York and Washington, where there were a lot of people retiring there, not necessarily with family following them. So they were people with financial means to get services, but not having access into the public health care system. So they weren't going through Medicaid or entitlement programs. They didn't have social workers helping them. So care management came about as a specialty field to help these people link up with services. So we provide comprehensive assessment. We develop plans of care. And then we implement those plans of care with the families and continue to provide ongoing oversight and navigation for those people.
What does a plan of care look like? What are the elements of a care plan?
Basically, when we do the assessment, we look at strengths and weaknesses of the person. We look at all areas of their functioning, from physical, cognitive, environmental, legal, financial, spiritual. So we put together a plan of care. We take those strengths and build that foundation. And then when we see areas of deficit or needs, we plug those in. So we might be putting in private duty home care. We might be needing elder law attorney. So we bring in those resources to make this work. So if the person's going to remain at home, what do we need to implement for that to happen? Do they need to go to a assisted living environment? If so, what's the process for that? What roles do family members each play in that, and what tasks have to be completed in order for that care plan to be executed and successful?
Now, you mentioned a moment ago, Tom, that the genesis of this was families with means. But it's not just for the wealthy, right? I mean, some people might think, boy, this is expensive. How can I afford this? But the reality is a little bit different, right?
Yeah, and to clarify, you don't have to be wealthy to have a care manager. We cost, I always joke and say we cost about the same as a plumber.
Is that good?
You are extremely wealthy.
But we do a lot of time educating families, too. We meet with them. I'm going after this to meet with a family at one of the hospitals just to talk about, what we do. So we do a lot of, I don't want to say pro bono, but we certainly help steer people, navigate them on the phone before they even become clients. So it's the way it was started was there were people not connected. So people started care management companies to connect them to the resources. So there are charges implied, just like you would for private duty, home care, elder law attorney. A lot of people just assume Medicare or Medicaid if it's pays for everything, or if it doesn't pay for it, it's not necessary, which, as you know, is not the case.
So, but at the same time, though, you guys are experts. You know who the resources are. You know where to find them, and you can probably get done in a much shorter amount of time what might take a family weeks or months.
Exactly. We're certified in our profession. We've been doing this for a while. We have to get certified to have a minimum of 5 years experience doing this. But family members are either too busy, or they don't understand the system, or quite frankly, they don't want to deal with this. You know, we're in the age of specialties with medical specialists. When you have a dentist now, you have 13 specialties alone. Mm-hmm. So families that are professionals and working hard realize the value of having other professionals take care of these kind of issues and handing that off to them, knowing they'll have the time and the expertise. Exactly.
One other question about the geriatric care management business. I know that Meta Johnson is an RN. How does that change the character of what you do? Because not all geriatric care managers have an RN.
Actually, I think the best fit is to have a company that has the social work and RN mix. The field was actually started, the profession, by social workers. But I think having worked with Meta as long as I have, I've realized the value of having those two perspectives, from the nursing and the social work perspective. And that's why we work as a team in assessing and providing those services.
When you say work as a team, how does that actually play out for the client?
Well, let's say I go in and do a new client assessment and there's a lot of medical needs. We'll have one of the nurses assess those, and that nurse might be the person following up with medical appointments, finding specialists, whereas I might be the one providing emotional support, hooking them up with resources, and assessing more globally how their functioning's doing, even some of the cognitive functioning. We both kind of share that role.
Tom, from the clinical standpoint, how much do you or Meta get involved in management of of care from a clinical standpoint, from a health clinical standpoint?
It really varies from case to case. We have some we're totally managing that we see several times a week. We have some that we might, once they're stabilized, see for custodial oversight once a month. It really depends on the situation. And we recommend that everybody has that initial comprehensive assessment where we formulate our baseline foundation of information, profiles on every client, so that when something changes, if they get to the emergency room, we're sometimes the first ones on the scene, or we're faxing our profiles to the medical team there so that they have firsthand updated information. You know, even with the age of electronic medical records, we're still having a lag time in getting that information on a timely basis when we're trying to treat an acute, you know, episodic situation.
One final question in regards to your geriatric care management. What is the typical client? Is it a individual that is home in their own home alone? Is it an individual that's in a hospital, or does this person reside with a family member?
All of the above, Sam. Hate to not be able to answer that more exactly, but you know, we get people referred to us at different stages of their life developmental tasks, so to speak. So an ideal situation would be a family who's thinking proactively, just like we would in a legal sense. Mom and dad are getting older. We're worried about them. We don't want to intrude, but we want to have a real good assessment by a professional team of people who can now make recommendations moving forward. So many people crave information, and quite frankly, they, with the age of internet, they think they can get that information themselves. So ideally, that's the case. Unfortunately, a lot of times people get referred to us in a moment of crisis for the first time, and we're coming up to them, rolling up our sleeves, and trying to get through all that mess and getting that person stabilized. And hopefully then the family will continue to utilize their services moving forward.
Okay. Let's move over to the law firm and your role there. I know that Patty Alderod basically specializes in the senior arena. What services are typically offered to seniors?
When someone's referred to the firm?
Yes.
Well, a lot of times there's that first initial, again, assessment of why the family's here today. You know, typically all of us get referred to the seniors a lot of times by the adult child. So why are they there today? Are we facing for the first time mom or dad not being able to live by themselves? Or is there a process of they might need nursing home and they have to sell their house? And what do we do to manage and protect those assets to keep that person, being able to pay for their own needs? A lot of families, a lot of seniors now we're seeing have special needs, aging children themselves, and they've never set up a special needs trust. So they're coming to us for the first time to get help with that. VA benefits, I think we've all heard about VA benefits. Patty worked for the VA for 11 years. She still volunteers there once a month, getting people access to those benefits that they're entitled to help pay for home care, help pay for other kinds of assistance, maybe get a VA pension to help them, again, be able to function as independently as possible.
Is there anything that when you're dealing with you said to spend a lot of time with the family member, not the actual person themselves. Is there anything that surprises families typically that you see that you're like, how do they not know that?
Yeah, there's a lot of times, you know, a lot of dysfunction comes out of the woodwork when we get into a situation. I have a new case I'm dealing with just this week where the home care provider, revealed that these two elderly people drink in the evenings. The family was not aware of that. So we're the first time sometimes getting that information. People are proud. They worked hard all their lives. They don't want their adult children always interfering, you know, and
in their business. They don't like them getting in their business.
Exactly. And sometimes we can become that trusted person who objectively, independently can be there as a support. They'll mm-hmm. open up to us a lot of times, and we do maintain that confidentiality. We want the perspective of both the elderly, the senior, and the family members. A lot of families say, we don't want you to meet with mom and dad, but we always try to get them by themselves to get their perspective as well.
Tom, in what you do on a daily basis, you're obviously dealing with individuals that have health or spiritual type of issues. What is it that recharges your batteries and keeps you going on a daily basis?
Well, in light of, you know, who these people are, we sometimes lose, you know, track of, well, this is a person, this was a thriving professional person. When they get referred to us in the healthcare system, sometimes we're treating the body, the disease process. I can't tell you how many times I've been in a hospital or a facility where they refer to the person as a room number or a bed number. So I think a lot of times what we try to do is bring back that dignity and that person, who they were. I had a case, a woman from New York was brought down here by her son, and she was totally in culture shock. She was 88 years old, lived in the same apartment for 40 years, hardly left her apartment because of fear of crime. So she comes down here to an assisted living in a place where people spoke different than her. She was Jewish, had a very, you know, New York accent. Mm-hmm. People were coming into her apartment at all times of the day and night. She was frightened and very agitated. Family thought she was, quote, losing it. When we came onto the scene, we managed to normalize what was going on. We taught her world and her culture to the staff at the facility. We made some changes so that they didn't have to come into the apartment unannounced. And we brought her out and assimilated her into the culture of Georgia. So within a year and a half, she was saying, I live in Georgia, and was eating peaches and just really having a fun time.
Soft-boiled peanuts.
Yeah. She taught so many people about her Jewish heritage and what she went through as a child. So we were, you know, as Meta, the nurse, was treating a lot of the medical pieces. Her and her husband came down very medically fragile. I was there making sure as a person she thrived, which was really rewarding. And we had her for 4.5 years, and she died just short of her 90th birthday. Got to be close to our family. My son and I went to her funeral service, and so we do get attached to people. And I know in healthcare we're not supposed to, but sometimes we do.
Tom, are you associated with any special cause or organization that you'd like to speak of?
Well, most recently I've been involved with the American Parkinson's Association, the local Georgia chapter, sitting on their board of directors, trying to help raise awareness of Parkinson's. It's a growing disease. We're seeing more incidents of that here in Georgia and the United States. Also, you know, getting people on board for sponsorships for their big fundraiser. In the past, I was on the board of Senior Services North Fulton and chaired their big fundraising gala every year. So, yeah, that's a part of what I do as a healthcare professional, is try to be involved. I'm on the board of the COPS Services for the Elderly as well. So a lot of times that's another way of raising awareness of the issues the seniors have in our community.
And in closing, if I have a loved one who we just don't know where to begin, what piece of advice might you give an individual that is seeking some type of counsel and coaching as to how we begin the process of providing services for that?
Well, a lot of times when I work with families, I point out to them that most times, more than not, we're actually saving them money in the long run. They're spending money on services they don't need. Literally, if a physician tells a family, you need to take mom home with nursing care, sometimes they're actually hiring RNs at, God knows, $40-some dollars an hour, $50 an hour. And that they literally took that to be what they needed when they might have needed something like a private duty companion or CNA. So we try to point out to them, by having somebody manage that, just like with managed care, part of our goal is cost containment. And no, we don't, you know, charge Medicare, but, you know, people think Medicare, Medicaid's free. We're all paying for services under those programs at some point. So families who understand the new wave in healthcare is to take ownership and accountability, maintain wellness, and look at the big picture, that's where we come in. And if you have somebody managing your automobile, managing your finances, managing your legal affairs, you should have somebody managing your seniors' overall needs as well.
Thank you, Tom. And how can our listeners reach you?
They can reach me by calling me directly at 404-791-8234. Would you like an email address?
Email or websites?
Website is www.metajohnson, that's M-E-T-T-A, johnson.com. Email is Tom, T-H-O-M, Corrigan, C-O-R-R-I-G-A-N, at bellsouth.net.
And what about the Elrod Hill Law Firm? Do they have a website as well?
That website is, that is www.elrod-hillfirm.com.
Terrific. Sorry to put you on the spot there.
Covered that very well, Tom.
Thank you, and I appreciate being here today. Thank you very much.
Our next guest is Sandy Thurber. She is the Director of Social Services at Gwinnett Medical Center's Extended Stay Center. Good morning, Sandy.
Good morning.
Brad, I need to correct something. It is the Extended Care Center. That's my bad in typing. I apologize. Sandy, why don't you begin by telling us a little bit of your background, where you're from. How did you get to be in the senior care arena?
Okay, I'm originally from Mississippi. Graduated from the University of Southern Mississippi with a bachelor's degree in sociology. Started working in nursing homes part-time doing activities with a friend of mine. And from there, I've worked in activities through my college years, got my degree, and was able to move right into the social service department. And from there, I've just stayed with nursing homes and found my niche.
So is this something that you knew from the time that you started part-time that that's what you wanted to do, or it just developed that way?
No, it just developed. It was just a part-time job to help out a friend who needed a part-time job, and the position was full-time, so we split it, and I just stayed with it. I liked it.
You liked doing the activities?
I did. It was a lot of fun. You got to play with people all day, and you didn't have a lot of stress behind it. And we could be very creative and really got to know people on a very individual basis. It was a lot of fun.
What were some of your favorite activities you used to do?
Probably singing. Not that I was a good singer, but just the sing-alongs, because everybody could do it. Mm-hmm. It was something everybody could participate in, regardless of their level of functioning. And usually songs were things that were very easy to come back to people.
Sandy, won't you tell us, where is the Extended Care Center located, and how is it related to Gwinnett Medical Center?
Okay, we are, our physical address is 650 Professional Drive, and we are located directly behind Gwinnett Medical Center. Professional Drive is a little side road that runs right behind the hospital, and we sit right there. While we're on the campus of Gwinnett Medical Center, we're not actually in the hospital. We are owned by the hospital. So.
It's kind of easy to miss, though, isn't it?
It is, but if you're looking for us, we do sit alone, and we do have a sign out front. We're not in a suite or in any of the doctor's buildings. So
yeah, outside the paid parking, too, you have free parking. That's a bonus.
We do have free parking, but it's small.
Limited.
But it's there. Yeah.
How long have you been with the Extended Care Center?
I've been with them for 4 years.
Okay, and where were you before that? Because it seems like you and I met prior to that.
So. I was at another facility, Delmore Gardens. And I was there for 7 years. Prior to that, Tom and I go back a few years to a facility called Meadowbrook that was in Tucker, and I was there for about 10 years.
Sandy, tell us what it is that the Extended Care Center does. Well, what is the specialty? And just kind of develop that for us.
Okay. Gwinnett Extended Care is an 89-bed skilled nursing facility. We are considered a fairly small facility for what we do. Most of the facilities in our area are 120 beds and over. We do long-term care, and we also do short-term rehab. Long-term care is what people typically think of as the nursing home placement piece that we do for seniors. And we also do short-term rehab for residents that are coming out of the hospital who have had some type of surgery or accidents or something that's happened that they can't return to their prior level. So they need some recuperation period with nursing, therapy, the things like that, that will give them time to recuperate to get back to their prior level.
Since you're located on the campus of Gwinnett Medical Center, is it possible that acute services can be provided from the medical center over to the extended care center, or how does that relationship function?
We don't really provide acute services. Okay. We are considered a subacute rehab facility. There is an acute rehab facility with the hospital, and that would be Glancy Rehab. They provide the acute side of it. We provide the subacute side of it.
Develop that. We had a guest, Kelly Dunham, on the show several weeks ago from Clancy. So how, what is the relationship between what Clancy does and what the Extended Care Center does?
Okay. Actually, we complement each other in that we can provide different levels of care depending on the resident's needs. Glancy Rehab is, again, like I said, it's an acute rehab setting. The residents there have to be able to maintain about 3 hours of therapy a day. Most of those residents there have multiple medical problems, and it is also considered a very short stay, generally 10 to 14 days. Subacute is just like it sounds. It's a step down from the acute. You don't have to do 3 hours a day. You may only be able to do 1 hour a day. And also, it gives you a longer duration for therapy. Depending on a resident's insurance coverage or if they're going through their Medicare, they could get up to 100 days of subacute rehab services. So you can have someone come from the hospital, very sick, very complicated, go over to Glancy Rehab, utilize those acute care days, still not quite ready to go home, come to the Gwinnett Extended Care, get some more time, continue to recuperate, and make it back home.
And with that, the continuation of care is maintained. Obviously, there's got to be communication with you and the people at Clancy as to the quality and the level of care that's required.
Right. Right. And we do clinical referrals. We're looking at residents. We're making sure that we can, number one, meet their needs in our setting. We're checking insurance coverage. We're letting people know up front. Like Tom was saying, a lot of people say, well, I have Medicare. Medicare pays for everything. And it doesn't. And so a lot of people have Medicare replacement policies now. And before that person is even in our building, we're already checking insurance and letting them know up front, this is the coverage you have.
So as the Director of Social Services, give us a little flavor of what it's like to be you. What does a day in your life look like?
It's really busy. I work with the residents once they come in the facility, and one of my primary roles is discharge planning. And that starts on day one. We start going over, what do you have at home? What's your equipment? What kind of services do you have at home? What is your home setup? Do you have stairs? Do you have small doorways? Do you live with someone? Do you live alone? Have you ever had home health? I'm trying to see what resources are already in place so that during that placement, while we're working with that person, if there are new needs that come up, we're already addressing those things, and I'm already putting into place things that are going to be there for them when they get home, whether it be a wheelchair, a walker, home health services. If they need extra attendant care at home, they're going to now need someone in there a couple of hours a day. Maybe they need some new education. They're a new diabetic, and so we're going to provide education while they're with us about this is what your blood sugar readings are going to run and those kind of things. So all of that is happening while they're with us during the stay. Another piece I do is just making sure that they're participating every day, that they're understanding the routine, the schedule, that they're utilizing the services that we're offering to them.
What do you do when the patient is, you know, I'm sure you have the whole spectrum of patients, some that, you know, want to do everything and get out of there and be strong again. But some patients who are a little more difficult that they're, you know, woe is me and I don't want to do anything. What are the different strategies you use to, you know, get them going?
The first strategy is the family. The family is usually very, very good about coming in and saying, look, Mama, we got to get this show on the road.
Right.
You know, let's get going. We just, you know, we can encourage a resident, but we can't force them to do things.
Right.
So if we say, come on, you really need to do therapy, and they're like, I am so tired. Please, I just want to rest today.
Or like, I've done enough. You know, like, I'm, you know, they're doing kind of a little bit, but they're, you know, they're not really doing what they got to do.
Right. And sometimes what we do is we just break it down very simply for them. And we say, okay, your goal is to go home, right? Right. Okay. When you go home, you need to be able to do one, two, three, these three tasks by yourself, right?
Right.
Right. Let's focus on those three tasks. If you don't have to walk 200, 300 feet when you get home, then that doesn't really need to be our focus.
Right.
things like getting yourself dressed, tending to your hygiene needs, preparing yourself a light lunch. Those are the kind of things that we start to focus on, because those are very practical things that that person has to do when they get home, and that's something that person can relate to.
Do you have any, like, statistics regarding, like, if a person's in a bed and not moving, aren't there, like, terrible ramifications health-wise?
Sure.
Like, in a short period of time?
Yes.
That maybe the patient doesn't really kind of fully understand?
Right. Probably one of the first things that you start seeing is skin breakdown. Where the resident's not moving around, the circulation's not going on, you end up with some skin breakdown. You end up with lungs that are not really
and the
working
muscles
well.
Atrophy fairly mm-hmm. rapidly, right?
Right. You could end up with some pneumonia. You could end up with some contractions with your muscles and things like that. So, yeah, you want to get up and kind of move around every day. Just getting up from the bed into a wheelchair is a great thing to do for yourself.
Sandy, are there any special organizations or causes that you are associated with you'd like to speak to?
Sure. I am actively involved in GSPN, which stands for Gwinnett Senior Provider Network. It's an organization in Gwinnett County where professionals and people that work with seniors in the county come together every other month, and we do a lot of networking, a lot of education, sharing of information. It's been going on for years. It's a really strong organization and one that's very, very helpful to me as I make resources to my families.
And if there's a piece of advice you could give to us or our listeners about rehabilitation centers, what might that be?
Probably to be very educated, to go and visit places. Don't just go on a website, look at a place, and say, oh, they look great. But to use your eyes and ears. Go into the facilities. Go visit friends that are in facilities. Go with your church group when they go visit facilities. Go look, talk, observe. See what's going on in that facility. The best time to do it is when you're not in a crisis situation, when you can think and you can look and you can learn. When you're in a crisis situation, you're overwhelmed. And sometimes you're in a very tight time schedule where the social worker's called and your mom needs to go and you have 2 hours to go find a place. And you just can't think along those lines. So I always encourage people, when do it before you're in a crisis situation. Go look, visit neighbors, visit friends, talk to people. And, you know, when the time comes, if it comes, you're going to have some background to pull from.
That's great advice. You don't ever want your family members to have to settle for the, you know, what the first name you come to on the list or whoever happens to answer the phone.
Right, yeah, right.
How can our listeners reach you, Sandy?
Probably email is a great way to reach me. And my email is cthurber, C-T-H-U-R-B-E-R, at GwinnettMedicalCenter.org. And I also have a direct line at 678-312-3064.
And the hospital's website is?
GwinnettMedicalCenter.org,
correct?
www.GwinnettMedicalCenter.org. Yes.
Okay, very good. Thank you for being with us
today.
Sandy.
Thank you for having me.
Our next two guests, both Deborah Herring-Gates and Jean Holly, are from the Congregational Ministries for Health and Wellness, part of the Gwinnett Medical Center. Good morning, Deborah. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing super.
Great. Congregational Ministry for Health and Wellness of Gwinnett Center. What a mouthful. Tell us a little bit, briefly, what it is that you do for that organization.
Oh, my duties are numerous. A typical day in my life could be lots of phone counseling. I do educational services and planning for education there in our church. I do confidential discussion of health concerns, visitations of homes and hospitals and nursing homes. I'm present and pray with people in times of crisis, health screenings, health fairs, planning for those kinds of things. Do a lot of referrals to the community. That's kind of a typical.
So now, Deborah, you are part of the Congregational Nurse organization, but you actually spend your time at Hopewell Missionary Baptist Church, correct?
That's correct. I'm actually employed by Gwinnett Hospital through, I'm employed by Hopewell Missionary Baptist Church, and we're affiliated with Gwinnett Hospital System. It's kind of complicated, so we'll explain a little bit of that a little bit later on.
Well, there's an interesting correlation here, but before we go there, tell us a little bit, let's take a step back, and tell us how you came to be here and where you're from and what moved you into this direction.
Well, I'm a mother of four adult sons. I have 15 grandchildren and one great-grand. I'm a registered nurse, and I've been there for 33 years. I have a bachelor's degree in health administration from the College of St. Francis. I went to nursing school in East St. Louis, Illinois. I was born and raised in Mississippi. I moved to Georgia in 1986, and I was called into this ministry of health in 1996. Of course, at the time, I did not realize it was a calling, but now it's very clear.
And how did that, quote, calling occur?
Actually, I'm an usher there at Hopewell Missionary Baptist Church, and it was in the bulletin. The job position was in the bulletin, which I never paid any attention, and I was advised to make application for it, and I just kept saying, I don't need that. I was lucratively employed with another hospital. But anyway, eventually I did put in the application, and later learned there were a lot of people who had put in application for that job, but I was accepted. And I've been there now for 15 years.
Oh, that's great. Let's move over to Jean Holly. Jean is the director of the Congregational Ministry for Health and Wellness. Jean, good morning. How are you?
Great. Good morning.
I'm going to ask a very obvious question. How does a ministry for health and wellness come from Gwinnett Medical Center? What's the relationship, and how did this relationship begin?
One of the visions and missions of the Gwinnett Medical Center is to keep our community healthy. And we had, in the early 1990s, we had a futurist come and speak with the leadership and talk about how to improve the health of your community. And he made a statement that if you want to improve people's health, you have to go where they are. And if you want to improve the health of families, you have to go to churches, because that's where they are. And out of that came an interest in the parish nurse program, which actually began in 1983 in Chicago at Lutheran General Hospital there. The chaplain there had a daughter who was a nurse, so he got to see both sides of the field, and he had some concerns about, after discharge, what happened with people, whether they really were being followed up on, were they staying healthy. He saw an awful lot of people coming right back in, and he was able to, with his daughter, imagine what it would be like if we had nurses in people's faith communities to do whole person care for them. And he was able to get a pretty substantial grant, and the International Parish Nurse Resource Center was begun, and they developed training programs for nurses to function in this capacity in the church. And Gwinnett Medical Center made a contact, actually through Emory University and the Carter Center, with this movement, and really had the vision to begin it. The finances for it come from the Gwinnett Medical Center Foundation. The hospital actually pays my salary, and I have a part-time clinical nurse educator that works with me. But the rest of the early startup expenses were borne by the foundation and by actually the Gwinnett, the volunteers at the Gwinnett Medical Center.
And when did this start with Gwinnett Medical Center?
In 1996. Deborah was one of our first three nurses. We've been 15 years now.
And you've been with it from the beginning?
No, actually, I've been with it for 7 years.
7 years.
I did a similar function for the Georgia Baptist Hospital in downtown Atlanta, but that when the hospital sold and folded and things changed, I had opportunity to stop driving 32 miles and go 6 miles from home.
That's a plus.
That was an easy choice.
Jumped
right?
All over that.
Holly, shoot, Jean, I told you I'd get the names wrong. Here I go again. I find this being a unique program, and you made reference that it was started in Chicago, the birth was there. Is this nationwide? How extended is it? Is there another such program in the greater Atlanta area?
Yes, it is. It's actually international now, not just nationwide. And the American Nurses Association has recognized what began as parish nursing, became congregational nursing, and then transformed itself into faith community nursing, because it's not just a Christian organization. The hospital is willing to partner with Christian and other religious groups. So we do not currently have other religious groups involved with us and would love to. But it began, lost my train of thought.
Now, why do you think that the other congregations haven't embraced it? Do you know?
There's several reasons that I'm coming up with as I try to work with different people. The model that we have at Gwinnett is a paid model, and the nurses are actually employees of the hospital, and the church reimburses us for their salary and benefits.
Uh-huh.
So it becomes a financial wash for the hospital. That way we can continue to expand.
Right. So the other congregations may not be open to that kind of financial arrangement?
Yes. Yes, some other religious groups in this Bible Belt of the South are small and maybe don't have the financial means to do it.
Right.
Some religions are more involved in, they don't even pay their preachers, you know. I mean, people devoted 2 years of free time to build a Hindu temple in Lilburn, and they're not going to pay a nurse. Yeah. So,
right.
You know, it's just a philosophy kind of thing. Also, I've had talked with some of the Hindu faiths and those that are tied to culture, and they are a little uncomfortable about partnering for fear that they're losing their younger generation culturally anyway, and so partnering with the hospital doesn't feel comfortable to them.
Right.
So now I know, though, that there are other denominations. So, for example, the Catholic Church has
yes.
long had parish nurses, and then I'm familiar with, and I don't know what the acronym stands for, but it's called a NORC, N-O-R-C, Neighborhood Outreach, or and I'm getting that wrong, but that's there's one over attached to Jewish Tower and Zabin Tower over there, so it's not a unique idea, but the interesting thing is people don't really know about it.
Yes, and it's really, you know, the fact that we've changed our names 3 times in 20 years doesn't help.
That's not helping, right?
Right. Yeah. So it is kind of hard to get the word out. And there is a philosophy in almost all religions toward whole person care and health. Health is a concern for the parishioners and other faiths other than the Christian faith. So the philosophies fit. It's partnering with the hospital and the financial end of it that sometimes blocks us.
And let me segue back to Deborah on that. How do you make your congregation or your parishioners aware of what you do, and how do they take advantage of the services that you provide?
Well, I have a large support there through my pastor. He's the greatest cheerleader that a parish nurse could ever have, and that's Dr. William L. Shields. He promotes the ministry from the pulpit. He allows me to interact with every ministry there. We do things from the pulpit that other churches would never dream of. We talk about prostate health. We talk about breast health. We talk about HIV and AIDS. We talk about diabetes and hypertension and vision care. We're just kind of think outside the box when we try to help bridge that gap that exists between faith and health. We certainly come from a body, mind, and spirit approach. And as one of the other persons said earlier, you know, we're so specialized in these areas. And in the old day, pastors was able to do a little of all of it. And nowadays, with congregations being so large, and we are a fairly large congregation there in Norcross, Georgia, the pastors cannot do it all. So as a parish nurse, we can kind of help attend to some of that the pastors in the old days were able to do, like visiting hospitals. Of course, it doesn't take away from that group of pastors visiting the sick and shut-in, but we can certainly be a link to that arm.
What do you find as being the most common request that you get? What do you do the most in your position?
It's kind of hard to say. I do a lot of referrals. There are a lot of people, especially the sandwich generation that we have, who have their elderly parents who are having to relocate back to Atlanta or come to wherever they are. They have no idea how to access the healthcare system, you know. And then they find that mom and dad or auntie or grandpa, they see them Christmas, Thanksgiving, short periods of time, and when they actually have to live with them for a length of time, they find out things that they didn't know. And it may sound like one of your other guests, but it's really quite interesting. And then we have to help try to, and parents have been so independent. So that's a big, you know, it's kind of like a tug of war. I am the parent, you're the child, but the roles are beginning to reverse a little bit there. So, and we have to kind of tiptoe through the tulips a little bit with that because, yes, they still are our parents. So to try to help them gain as much independence as we possibly can, you know, I do a lot of accompanying elderly people to the doctors and becoming an advocate for them and helping to interpret that information to their working children or what have you. So,
do you think that the doctors and medical people are doing a better job of communicating with the elderly, or you think that they kind of don't?
Well, it's kind of hard to say because, I mean, you only can have so many minutes in with a doctor.
Right.
And many times, unless you've walked the mile in my moccasins, you sometimes don't quite understand.
Right.
So I try very hard to try to get those individuals tapped into physicians, geriatric physicians, or physicians that I know that will kind of help listen to them a little bit better, communicate
right.
to
so
them.
So what you're saying is just make sure your doctor is a good fit for your needs at this
exactly.
stage in your life.
Exactly, exactly. One size does not always fit.
Right.
My experience with healthcare, and I've had about 20-some years of experience. Today, the gobbledygook and the layers in healthcare are so numerous and it's so extensive that even someone with expertise has a problem trying to wade through it. And I know the system. I know how to maneuver within the system. But Joe Blow out on the streets, I feel sorry for them. And I'm sure this is what you do. You're their advocate.
Yeah, and as much as you try to tell people to write your questions down and before, like you said, I'm a nurse, and when I'm dealing with a crisis situation, I can write stuff down, and when I get to the doctor, I can very easily forget. So, you know, it's really good to have that second set of ears and that other mouthpiece to kind of help you through that.
Jean, I think you had another comment.
I was just going to speak to Dr. Shields. He really is an amazing advocate for this program and for whole person care. There's a day in February called Red Dress Day. It's an attempt to remind people that heart disease is now number one killer in women. And on that day, his entire choir is in red. He is in red robes. All the ministers' wives are dressed in red. It is the most awesome emphasis that you can imagine. And I've been to Deborah's Church on Diabetes Sunday, and she's had tables set up, and there are resources available free of charge for people who have diabetes and need to know more information. And Deborah was at that table saying, George, come over here. I know your mama has diabetes. You take this home and give this to her. Sandy, you need this. And she really knows her people and knows her people's needs. And over these 15 years, they've known who Deborah is, that she's confidential, that she can be trusted. That she's a deeply spiritual woman who has a great wisdom for them, and everywhere she goes, she's like a rock star.
Jean, that's a great segue back to Deborah. I know that you have a story that you want to tell us, so why don't you go ahead and do
that. I'd like to tell you a story, but to piggyback on what Jean says, we are really a believer that by increasing awareness of diseases, especially those that affect African Americans, that early detection can mean better outcomes. And, of course, we always say an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. I have so many stories that I could share, but when I'm able to help an individual who has come through, especially a senior, who has transitioned from a comfort zone to a foreign land, and that being Atlanta, to get them attached to or connected to resources that's available. We have people who are underinsured, no insurance. Medicare does not take care of all of it. We had this one lady who was still working but had lost her job. Hypertension. Called me. I didn't know. I meet a lot of people over the phone, so very seldom I get a chance to put a face with those voices. But I told her, we're having a health fair. Come to the health fair. We'll have some resources there for you. And unfortunately, a lot of people will use a health fair as a way to get screenings to find out what's going on. But that it can't stay there with me. You got to have people, places to connect people into when you find out that there's a problem that's going on. And I've called on Griswold in the past to help me with situations like that. But she came to the health fair. She had a history of hypertension. We have a Dynamap that the volunteers at the hospital donated to me. And when I heard that bell go off, I just knew it was that lady. So, and I look up, and then this group of folks is coming toward me with big eyes. And I walked over, and we had her to do some meditation and relaxation and took a blood pressure again. Of course, it was still very high. We ended up taking her to Duluth. It was John Glancy then hospital. They admitted her to the ER, to the ICU. She stayed there for several days. When she was ready to be discharged, she called me. So, of course, her car had been left there at the church after the health fair. I went and picked her up, and on my way back, I learned so many things about this lady that she had been dealing with some substance abuse. That's why she had lost her job. She had no health insurance. Well, I was able to connect her with our substance abuse program there at the church, and thank God she was delivered from that. Now she has a job, she has a house, she has a car, she's gainfully employed. Those are the kind of stories that just keep me going, even though sometimes I don't hear outcomes.
Yeah. That's why we all do right. This, right?
Yeah.
Deborah, as long as you've got the mic, what tip can you give to our listeners?
Well, I would first of all say call your church and find out what resources that you may be able to tap into from your church. Churches are so large, sometimes people think that you just go to church to hear a sermon on Sunday, but you sometimes have no idea all of the resources that they have. And if that don't work, I would say call Gwinnett Hospital System to find out where congregational health nurse could be, because we do a lot of referrals. We just don't work with our congregations alone. We reach out into the community. Anybody who comes to us, we don't turn them away just because they are not of our race, our culture, or our religion.
So asking for help.
Ask for help.
And Jean, same question to you.
I guess I really want people to understand that they have to be aware of not just their physical health, but their emotional health and their spiritual health. If people are going through a physical health crisis, there's an emotional tie in there, and there's a spiritual tie in there. And sometimes we try to fix everything by going down only one road and just trying to see the physician. Or maybe we're just involved in grief and grief counseling and are not aware of how it's affecting our body. And then we need to, in our own minds and hearts, understand where these stressors are taking us spiritually, where our spiritual support is, and if there are breaches or blocks in our spiritual lives to receiving that support. To not try to look at ourselves as we so often do here in the West as the foot is unrelated to the rest of the body. If you've ever been on crutches, you know you lose your arms, your foot, your whole thing. You know, we have to understand that when we're in a spiritual crisis, it's going to affect us eventually, physically and emotionally. It's all tied together. It needs to be looked at. Can I say one other thing, too? We do have a course every June to prepare registered nurses to become faith community nurses, and if people would like information about that course, it's a week-long intensive. It's more than just education. It's life-changing to move you from physical care into ministry toward people. It's an awesome course.
And, Jean, how could our listeners who are RNs reach you in regards to that course?
They can reach me by email, and it's jholley, J-H-O-L-L-E-Y, at GwinnettMedicalCenter.org, or they can call me on my personal line. It's 678. I gave you time to get your pencil. 678-312-2000. 2467. And also at the Gwinnett Medical Center website, which is www.gwinnettmedicalcenter.org, there's a click for programs, and the information is under programs, and it has the dates of the course and that information there.
When we post this on the website, we will also connect a link to that particular page. I know it's probably a lengthy link that nobody would remember, but we will post that online so that people can get at that. And, Deborah, how about your contact information?
Well, I'm there at Hopewell Missionary Baptist Church there in Norcross, Georgia, and the website is www.hopewellmissionarybaptist.org. It's a little long one. My email address is dherring, H-E-R-R-I-N-G, at Hopewell, H-O-P-E-W-E-L-L, missionarybaptist.org. The telephone contact number over there for me is 770-448-5475.
Thank you, Deborah. Thank you, Eugene. That's it for today. Thanks to all of our guests for joining us. Thanks for our listeners for tuning in. You can listen to a recording of today's broadcast at eugeriaradio.com. And in closing, if the youth of this nation are our greatest natural resource, it goes without saying that the seniors are our greatest national treasure. From Eugeria Radio, thank you and have a blessed Christmas season.
Eugeria Radio is sponsored by Griswold Special Care and is recorded in the Business Radio X Studios.